Welcome, everyone, to Coffee with Centuro. This is episode 18. It's lovely to have everyone here. And today we've got the usual crew, the guys, Zane, Ben. Good to see you guys here as always. But today we have a rose amongst the thorns. So welcome to Ekaterina. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Good. Ekaterina is the co-founder and growth marketer at InspoHub. What is InspoHub, Ekaterina?
So I set up a company 3 years ago when I was still living in Finland, and the plan was to create a hub of inspiration. So I saw a business opportunity in the influencer marketing market. So I saw that there were lots of small businesses who wanted to collaborate with influencers, but they thought that they were too expensive for them, for their budgets. And I saw lots of influencers who had like very engaged audiences, but they had like smaller audiences, and they thought that no one would like to collaborate with them. So that was the point where I thought, okay, maybe I can be this middleman who will bring those two markets together. But the sadness was that the market itself wasn't ready for influencer marketing. So people couldn't understand the benefits of collaborating with influencers of different scales. But when I started working with small businesses, they realized that, okay, we would like to test this influencer marketing thing, but we also need help with social media marketing and website development and lead generation strategy. So can you be our one-stop shop for everything? And I was like, okay, here we go. Here we go again. So yeah, currently we are like a creative agency. So we have the marketing side of the business and the video production side of the business. So in terms of our marketing services, we work with startups and scale-ups. So we are the best at blank canvas. So let's say you've set up a business, you got your first funds going on, and you need to prove the concept that your business is valuable and it has demand in the market, but you have very limited budget. And obviously you have like stakeholders, so it's your own funds. So you're panicking, like, what's the best way of spending this money to make sure you get the best return on investment? And here we come with our expertise and with our knowledge, and we help you build the strategies and make sure that you can kickstart with the lead generation with small budgets and make sure that you actually get the returns on your investment. So we work with startups and scale-ups from tech and healthcare mostly in terms of our marketing side of the business. And as for video production, we are focusing mainly on live, and if it's a live event, it would be sports and music, or now 2020, the year of Zoom calls, so online conferences as well. So this is the commercial side of sort of production.
Good. Sorry, I think my internet may have dipped in and out there, I think we're still on track. So Ekaterina, what we normally do is we quickly fly through some news, this week's kind of business news, not all of it, just the things that kind of caught my eye, and then we go into a little bit of not a case study, but because I haven't gone as in depth as my fellow two guys there, but we'll talk about a case study as well. So let's just do some news very quickly. I was checking out on the BBC this week, and I saw that Slack was sold for £20 billion to Salesforce. Guys, any of you use either of those, Salesforce or Slack? I know that in our internal teams we use the opposition, which is MS Teams. We've used Slack before, right?
Slack.
But the thing is that, I mean, why I mentioned this is that £20 billion is a lot of money for something that is actually getting beaten up by MS Teams. So MS Teams has got over 100 million users, and I think Slack has something like 12 million users. And I know that Salesforce is kind of buying it to couple it together and make something bigger, but it's a lot of money for something that is not altogether unique or special.
Yeah, predominantly a chat for corporate use.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a defensive move, I think, because Microsoft, obviously Teams is definitely hacking away at Slack, and I think even the Zooms and so forth. I think Zoom is quite lucky. It's kind of become the adjective of you know, your online meetings and so forth. But I think with Microsoft coming up with, out with, I think it's called Dynamics. It's basically a competitor to Salesforce software. I think this is Salesforce going, Slack, let's do this together and stand our ground and take them on. So they're going to start combining their efforts into one big sort of consolidated enterprise bit of software and start trying to fight off the Microsoft Teams. So it'll be interesting to see how, I don't know if the purchase has fully gone through. I mean, it might have done by the time that this comes out. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they integrate it. Will Slack continue to operate as a, you know, a separate entity, or will it become more part of the Salesforce?
Yeah, interesting to see how it plays out. But I think the main motivation is obviously we're moving to a more online digital world. People are working so much more remotely. Even when things go back to normal, I think remote will become the new normal in terms of, I think a lot of employers will give employees flexibility. Do you want to come in once a week, twice a week? It's up to you. Depends on the industry. And so these sorts of communication channels become so much more important. So rather than create your own, if you can just buy an existing one, existing user base, depends what their wider plans are, but you know, it'll give them a boost in terms of timing to get there.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the Slack's co-founder Carl Henderson, he's not actually a huge, he wasn't a huge, or he was a skeptic of work from anywhere type of thing, and then the I think COVID kind of maybe enhanced it, and the articles that I've read about this is, it is one of those moment in time deals, whereas because it's kind of all the stars are aligning, and if you don't make this deal right now, it might actually be passed. And I mean, and I think that's where it comes in as interesting here, is that the timing of these big issues, these big sales, are also very important.
Yeah, I think if you, especially like, I don't obviously know enough, but I imagine Slack were just like, yep, bias, because I like the fight. They're up against Teams, they're up against Microsoft. Microsoft Teams is free. It's got all the video meetings and so forth going through it. It would have been a massively uphill battle. So I think, yeah, for them especially, I can imagine they're just like, yep, cool. We'll take the 20 billion, thanks. Good luck. Obviously, they'll still be part of it and whatnot. But yeah, I think you're right. Timing is key.
Because when they actually... went public, I think it was last year, and their share prices dropped up and then dropped quite significantly. And again, it's one of those things where the timing is, it's all about timing on this one.
Yeah.
I'm gonna jump, not a great segue here, Ben, but I'm jumping to Nestle. Nestle has said that they're going to be investing $3.5 billion to cut carbon emissions. It's one of those things where you don't really think of Nestle as, and no, Nestle is not sponsoring our coffee, even though I am drinking an espresso here. But you don't think of them as someone who has this massive issue of a carbon footprint. Yet they want to halve their emissions by 2030. And how's this? They plant 20 million trees every year. That's their commitment as well that they're doing. What do you think of these social kind of things that companies get a hold of? And then from a marketing point of Katarina, they probably doing it for the right reasons, but you probably also don't miss out the opportunity to spin it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that obviously our market is now overfilled with options there. Let's say, you know, we're talking about Nestle and their products. Like, go to our local, like, giant Tesco, and you see lots of different companies, especially now, like organic coffees and organic other, like, teas, et cetera, et cetera. So I reckon it's just also their way of, like, competing with other, like, new businesses coming in. So it's a good marketing tactic. You know, everyone should work on their corporate brand, and everyone should work on their reputation. And hopefully they're doing this from like the good reasons as well. They have the heart of gold and they want to do it for the environment, not only for their public profile.
Yeah, I think with these sorts of things, even if it is only for the public profile, even though that's bad, that's an assumption if you make it. And even if it is, it doesn't matter because it's for the wider good. So if that's what's going to motivate companies to make these decisions, then it needs to happen, because the climate change is a real big problem, despite what Trump says. People need to act fast. And if the large corporations are contributing to damaging the environment, you know, they're going to have the biggest impact, as much as everyone can as an individual. So it doesn't really matter what the motivation is, as long as it's happening.
Yeah, as long as we have 20 million trees
planted. A year. Yeah, being planted.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And here's the perfect segue, Ben, just for you, is that investing 20, it's not as much in the billions, but it's 24 million in developing e-fuel. Now, they already have released their electronic and hybrid cars, but they are still, like, the 911 is still a combustible engine. Wow. They want that feeling and the thing, but they know how bad normal kind of fuel is. So they're actually developing e-fuel, which is going to be a carbon neutral fuel that still operates a normal kind of car engine. Again, another one of those where big companies starting to put the things in the right places.
Yeah, I think it's very necessary, and it makes a lot of sense, because if they can crack it, though, the potential market, as much as electronic cars are the future in some level, if you can get a fuel that works for the entire existing market, there's how many vehicles in the world? There's how much infrastructure to transport fuel around? Like, you'll just immediately tap into that market and start taking over it. So I think it makes sense. It's a good, you know, you've got to hedge your bets. I'm sure they're doing a lot of work for electric cars as well, but this is also, it's going to take decades for electric to become the dominant vehicle type. There's going to be lots of people who don't want to transition to electric vehicles. There's, you know, a whole market of people who don't want self-driving vehicles because they're sort of scared of it and so forth. So there's still a massive market there for, if you can just go switch the fuel at the pump, people can feel good about it and they still get to use their existing cars and the existing infrastructure and the way they know how to do it. Doesn't take overnight for you to get your car back up to full battery. I think it makes sense. I think that's as much an economic revenue as much as want to do the right thing.
So moving on, robo taxi. It's totally fully automated driverless taxis are being used in China at the moment. So it's working there. Robo taxi. It's the company's called AutoX, and they have fully automated. They've got, it's not a huge fleet, but they've got 25 driverless cars. Waymo is also in the States. They've been actually doing it since 2018, but just in a very small suburb of Arizona, they also have driverless cars. Would you guys call up a taxi and hop in it with no one in there? Ekaterina, what do you do on if you're out with your girls on a girls' night? Would you all of a sudden kind of, the car pulls up, there's absolutely no one inside, and in you go, take me home?
I would say the unconscious bias is too strong for that.
I mean, it's safer in a COVID environment. There's no driver breathing on you.
Yeah, it depends on what are the stats, you know, because they've obviously, you said like 25 cars they have currently, like
just taxi. in China at the moment, currently doing it. I believe there's another company in Russia that's also
testing. Yeah, when I was going to the driving school in Russia, they were giving us like the rule number one: think about the other idiot on the road. So it's as long as you can be a great driver, it's not really enough. So you need to make sure that enough person is also following the rules. So I would say that it's interesting to see the stats, like how, like, successful the pilot was and, you know, how safe it was. So potentially maybe a robot can be better than the majority of new drivers on the road. So maybe I should work on my unconscious bias and be more open-minded.
I think that's the thing. It depends on the stats, like you said, but if it is true that, you know, computers or robots are safer than people, obviously there's always going to be the risk of accidents, things go wrong, malfunction. But if the statistics end up showing that driverless is safer than with drivers, then it's almost becomes a no-brainer. It's just, like you said, the unconscious bias, like, there's no one in there, that's scary, I don't want to get in that, even though it's probably safer. But then the other debate, I think we've had this in a previous episode, is if something does go wrong, who is to blame? There's no driver. Is it the car manufacturer? Who takes responsibility? And then there's a big hoo-ha. So that's another thing to think about.
Yeah. Just on a...
No, go Ben, sorry.
I was going to go on a completely different angle on this one. Safer from a COVID point of view that there's no driver, but no one there to clean it between passengers. So I've always wondered what's to stop people then messing with it and so forth. There's a company here in the UK that are now out doing fully automated deliveries. They've got the first road legal vehicle on the roads at the moment. It actually picks up medicine and takes it to care homes. But I always just wondered, because the idea is that you can get delivered your package wherever you are. Obviously, it used to be, you know, when we were all not at home, at the office and so forth, you could just send it to the office. But if you went out for lunch, it would just update to where your phone is and you could get it to pull up outside the restaurant and deliver your package so you never miss it. Things like that. And then I always just wondered, what if someone messes with the vehicle in some way? How do you know, you know, some young kids leave a fart bomb in there or something? And like, I don't know. There's just that angle I was wondering.
Is that what you normally do?
back in my young days. I imagine there's probably some potentially gross things going on after a night out, for example. So they'll have to come up with vision software to see if someone's thrown up in the car or something. Between rides.
The extra things you have to consider when you take away the human being, right?
Yeah, now I definitely know that I'll never take Ben for a lift.
Never get it after me.
Exactly. Okay, but then I mean, I want to go. This is now also targeted very much because we have you on the show, Ekaterina. But there's some marketing trends that came out the marketing trends of 2021, and the first one is that Chrome has decided that. And it almost feels that they will stop supporting third-party cookies in 2022. So we are heading towards a cookieless future, as strange as that sounds. But we're heading towards a cookieless future where third parties won't be able to put a cookie on your computer. That's kind of your world, isn't it? When it comes to remarketing, following people, what do you think of that?
Inside, I'm dead. Thank you for very great news for Friday night, Suraj.
Oh, sorry. You've got a year to capitalize.
Yeah, I'll just make sure that everyone is using Safari or something else. Well, of course, it's not a great piece of news because in terms of lead generation strategies, you know, I would say why cookies are so important in terms of, let me explain this from the marketing perspective and for the user perspectives. So these days we're exposed to so much content out there. Every minute, every step of our way, we see and consume a lot of content. And of course, our focus became more short-term. You know, let's say you're looking for a new product that is going to save your life or make your life so much easier, but then suddenly you get distracted by something else and you leave the website, you know, and then lucky you, you know, you become retargeted with a marketing professional who is giving you more information, like nurturing you on this product, explaining how it works, you know, giving you customer reviews, and eventually potentially gives you a discount. And who doesn't like a good discount, right? So that's why I believe that the cookies is a great thing as long as the company really follows the GDPR rules. Because when they came into force a few years ago, some companies were just pretending that they were doing this. And, you know, in terms of the Brexit deal as well. So currently we are like the GDPR works in the same way as in Europe, but starting from the 1st of January, it should be a different law, let's say in the UK, how you can use customer data. And this law hasn't been fought through yet because we have lots of other laws to think about, you know, and lots of other problems to solve. And I think it was already like a few months ago where this agency that handles inquiries regarding the breach in GDPR, they already said like, we're not taking any more inquiries because we don't know what's happening. And from the 1st of January, it won't make any sense anyways. So this is another piece of news, guys, if you haven't heard of that yet. So I would say that it's probably what Chrome, they're trying to do. They're trying just to save their customer users from those companies who don't do their job well, which is understandable. They don't want them to be harassed by lots of inappropriate advertisement. And I don't know, have you watched this new movie with documentary with Netflix, Digital Dilemma, Social Dilemma?
Not yet, no.
Maybe that's also one of the causes why they're trying to sort of protect customer data. It's a good one to watch if you don't know how normally social media works and how every step of your way, every like, every share, everything what you do on social media really affects you and how it's used for enhanced consumer behavior. But if you work in the marketing field, you won't learn much like from that movie. But as a consumer, I would say it's important for everyone to educate themselves on how their data is being used. That's for sure. But we'll see how it goes with the Chrome and what's the cause. Like, are they just trying to protect users or actually they will not give them, or those companies who actually follow the GDPR rules and who are not abusing and using customer data, you know, they will be the ones missing out in terms of their interaction with the customer.
Yeah, I think it reflects the current climate as well. So recently Apple kind of introduced privacy features on iPhones, which stop you from, or Facebook collecting data. So suddenly, you know, Facebook and Apple had a bit of beef, you know, like, oh, we can't collect the data. We can't, you know, target ads, which means Facebook's revenue gets hit because companies are like, well, you know, we're getting less bang for our buck. So if Google are getting involved as well, I mean, this is similar to the thing we were talking about earlier with Nestle. You know, what's the motivation? Is it to comply with the laws, possibly? Is it also because of general sentiment? So is it now we've reached a point where people are like, we're really worried about social media, we're really conscious about data, who we're sharing it with, and is this a way to keep people on side? Now, if that's what Chrome's doing, more people will use Chrome rather than Microsoft Edge or Safari or Firefox. So there's that to think about as well.
But I would say that it's interesting that two absolutely enormous big events in the... Pardon? Hello? Suraj?
I didn't keep going. I think Suraj is slightly frozen.
Okay. So in terms of the Social Dilemma movie, you know, and a few other documentaries that came in the same time, because, you know, that the US election... why Trump won and why we are leaving the EU at the moment, there was partly, or actually, it was affected a lot by the retargeting ads and their social media campaign. And targeting those people who've never been targeted before with the election and voting schemes. So that's why, you know, there is a lot of attention around user data these days. And
The pessimistic side of me asks, how much data or control does this then give Google over that data? Because data is the biggest commodity at the moment. That is the gold of 2020. I was reading an article earlier this week that two of the biggest acquisitions of the year, and people don't really know about. We're talking the $20 billion Slack sale. I think it's $27 million in US dollars, billion, sorry. But two of the biggest acquisitions this year were both data companies. The lower one was about $27 billion, and the higher one was $44 billion. So data is king at the moment, and controlling it and the value of it is crazy. So, yeah, the pessimistic side of me wonders, well, if third-party cookies can't get the data, do you then have to get the data from Chrome if you want to retarget and so forth? And how does that work? Or that's what I'd be interested to understand is, yeah, where is the play? Is it good for privacy, or is it good for them as well?
Well, it's interesting because one of the other trends that come up a little bit later is a shift in ad spend, because what's happening is there's a shift in ad spend that kind of goes because of the increase in e-commerce. More advertising is taking place on e-commerce sites, so external ads that are on e-commerce sites. So during 2020, that rose by 39%, and it's predicted that it's going to rise a further 30% in 2020. So that's advertising on e-commerce platforms, and that's probably going to be a new way of kind of not worrying too much about the cookies and just targeting. But it's going to be a lot harder because you won't be able to follow the person. You'll just need to have a lot. It's going to almost go back to the old school, right? So when when I was young, and we used to have magazines and stuff, before all of this digital stuff, you had to know the readership of every magazine and then put together a really comprehensive kind of ads planning campaign where you bought at the right in the right magazines to hit your target audience. It almost feels like we're going back to that, where you won't just be able to go, let's place a cookie on that guy and follow him wherever he goes. It's now going to be, let's think of who's reading and consuming which site. And then
do they not go hand in hand? So I'm not an expert in this, but is it not a case of, like, when you place an ad on social media, for example, you're thinking, I want to target 20 to 50 year olds in the US that are interested in XYZ. So from the placement perspective, you're still thinking like that as you would with the old school magazines, but the social media platform is the one that uses the cookies and all of that to then present it to the right people and all the other data. So I don't know, it's a weird shift because it makes it more difficult for those platforms to know who to target, I guess, potentially. I don't know. Katerina, you're probably the expert on this.
So, Siraj, I have a quick question about this trend. So are they saying that companies are moving their ads onto like e-commerce platforms as like Google network partners? It's like, let's say you checked an online website with the furniture and then you check this beautiful chair and then suddenly it follows you, whatever the website you go onto.
No, I think they're saying that that e-commerce platforms have now ad banner ads and a lot more spend is being put onto there because of the increase in traffic for e-commerce anyway. So the e-commerce shot up and therefore there's more eyeballs on e-commerce. So therefore I want to have my ads where the eyeballs are.
But what happened because of the COVID? You know, like I've been an advocate for going digital for the last 5 years, but suddenly COVID happened and everyone had to actually bring their benefit and their products into the digital world, build up the website. Like look at the statistics and like how much money people made on like building websites, you know, during this time on e-commerce platforms, because all this old fashioned traditional companies, they decided to do the shift. But what happened in the marketing digital space is that Google is just earning so much more these days, because when I compare what I used to pay per click for my clients before COVID and what I pay now, like the competition is so rough. So now like what used to cost like £1 per click now costs £5. Because everyone in the same digital space. Because before that, we would say, okay, someone from an old-fashioned company, because old-fashioned company, or because their consumers are using more like an out-of-home content, you know, bus stops, magazines, etc. So we didn't compete in the same space. So they took over their print and out-of-home, and I was doing my business in the digital field. But now everyone came into digital because people are staying at home and they're doing everything online. So there is much more competition these days in the ad spend. And that's why e-commerce, of course, it was an increase there. And more companies are trying to find, instead of placing a banner somewhere on when you enter London, you know, from M25, having a massive banner, like showing off your product, you know, try to replace this banner with a digital banner on some e-commerce platform. So it's just the consumer behavior.
I mean, the one thing as a foreigner coming into London and using the underground is the advertising. So wherever you're going, on the escalators, on the everywhere, there's just advertising everywhere. I mean, that the eyeballs that those ads received during COVID must have dropped tremendously. Nobody's going to take an advert out on the wall of the underground because nobody's traveling on the underground.
So now,
therefore, it's digital, right?
Absolutely. And now, if you go to next time, I don't know, guys, if you come to the underground, like in the nearest future, have a look, pay attention. You will see that 50% of the ads are now sponsored by TFL.
Using up the space.
So it's the London, it's just a local like transport.
So the trains themselves are paying for the ads.
But I guess also there's no theater, right? So there's one of the things is the theater, where you guys do your West End, or had a lot of adverts on the underground, and now they wouldn't be advertising anyway. So, But it kind of leads to one of those other trends that was there, and that is the continued kind of, it's called, they mentioned it in this article, continued COVID assessment, which is just basically what are the trends that really picked up during COVID that is going to continue. So there are a lot of brands that restaurant brands that never had a big delivery service as part of their value proposition. They had to do it now, and it's going to continue. So why just drop it all of a sudden because people can come in? They might as well keep it and try and double up their things when people can eventually come back to the restaurant. But what are the other trends do you think that will continue? That were big spikes during COVID that probably going to continue next year.
So should I start?
Yeah,
okay. So I would say, like, when the COVID happened back in March, I could see, like, being a part of the business network and talking to other companies and businesses, I was asking them, okay, so how are you going to adapt your strategy now? And there was probably 70% of businesses who said, oh, it's going to pass. Let's just wait. Let's get the monies from the government, put everyone on furlough, and just relax. You know, it's as stressful as it is with this new COVID virus, and, you know, why bother? I said, okay, well, what if this is the new reality? I told them, and they said, no, come on. It's gonna just another flu, it will pass. But there were 20% of other companies that were saying, okay, we need to adapt. We need to make sure that we have always this backup. Let's get the e-commerce. So let's, if we have the workforce, maybe there is another service or product that we can launch. You know, what are the other new startups and labs who can help us go into the digital world? So, and those companies are actually flourishing at the moment, because with the second lockdown, those 70% who said, oh, come on, it will all come back to norm, they're like, okay, we need to do something now. I mean, we don't know for how long we are in this. So I would say that in terms of, like, the trends, is that everyone will start having a backup. So always having, like, a long-term strategy in terms of, okay, what if some other similar things will happen? What if we will all be locked in our houses? So what are we going to do? How are we going to manage our teams? How are we going to interact with our customers? How we will attract our customers? How we will communicate with them? So I would say that a big thing into, like, the digital will be, and, like, finding partners who can, like, the technological advanced companies and partners who can help you, like, further develop your product or service.
Ben and Zane, is there anything that you've done for the first time in COVID because of lockdown, and that you think, oh, that wasn't so bad, I might continue that?
I thought, just to avoid some of the obvious stuff, one thing I'd be interested to see, and this doesn't count to your question of have I done it yet, but, like, I'd be interested to see how domestic holidays develop and if that continues. So obviously we saw Airbnb's stock went, but then they started picking back up based off domestic travel. Yes. And then so I'm interested to see if that becomes more of a common thing, because obviously as we start to come out, I think, you know, international things will be one of the last. Like, once the UK opens up, doesn't mean I'll be able to, you know, fly to Australia or wherever I want to go. So if I've got that immediate need of finally we're out, let's go on a holiday, it's probably going to be domestic. So I wonder if that will continue, but also if the domestic markets will start to adapt to it, both for, you know, corporate events and so forth, might start looking more domestically, and what are the experiences we can do locally, and you know, rather than target international audiences, how do I make people from London come to Birmingham for a weekend and so forth? I think that would be a trend that would be interesting to watch and see if it continues.
Zane?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough question. I don't think I've done anything beyond the obvious that we've all had to do, particularly through a digital perspective. But one thing I have done is drive a lot more. So, I mean, I've always had a car, but it was usually just for small trips. And I know there's not really anywhere to go. But I've probably driven more this year than I did the previous 2 years combined, which probably isn't a good thing for the environment. So Porsche needs to hurry up with this e-fuel. And hopefully it works in non-Porsche cars, unless any of you want to get me one. But I think before I was always like, London is so well connected. The public transport is great. You can get anywhere on the tube. Now I'm like, driving is so much better. Why was I spending all this time on the tube?
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting once it opens back up how the traffic will go and if you'll still be enjoying the experience.
That's true.
I mean, one of the things that I've definitely, and my wife and I, we've kind of the online exercising. So, you know, we in South Africa, there's this a guy who started out his business in just during early stage of lockdown, which is he's kind of the instructor with his wife doing the exercises behind him. And it has grown into an absolutely massive business here. They have an online subscription. People are canceling their gym membership, and you're just exercising at home. And it's HIIT classes, so it's high intensity interval training. But you train for 30 minutes, and you lose that whole thing of having to drive to the gym, go and gym with other people, drive back. It's just in your lounge on the screen. You've got lots of different options. They have yoga classes, stretching classes, cooking classes. They've created this entire business around exercising at home. And I think that's another trend that might stay.
One other thing which might be interesting, is the like do-it-yourself kits. Is a fun idea. So obviously a lot of people came out with like a barbecue kit, and they will just send you everything you need to do a barbecue at home. And you know, we've got things like HelloFresh and so forth, which give you your full meals. But you know, cocktail kits where they just send you the stuff you need to make yourself a little cocktail party. Those were sort of a fun thing which might continue as well. But I think the, you know, stay at home dates and date night and so forth will probably continue to be a thing, because it's been a great money saver, obviously, and you just had to learn to adapt and then you found a way to make it fun, whereas before it probably wouldn't have seemed fun.
I would say that my three predictions in terms of industries that will be flourishing post-COVID times. The first one will be mental health. So lots of companies are now like different apps are coming up, you know, like more. So there's more being done around mental health because we've been all heavily affected by being locked in our homes, not being able to reconnect with our loved ones. You know, me as a foreigner, myself as an expat, you know, my family and my friends live in Russia and Finland, and I couldn't come to see them. That was absolutely frustrating for me. So the one would be the mental health. The second one will be like what Siraj said, is like online educational platforms. So lots of people are going digital. Lots of people are thinking how they can deliver their service or product online. So those will definitely develop further. And you know that in China, they have this like special, it's not like a Cyber Monday, but it's on the 11th of November. It's called like a single person day. Yeah. So they, because they were not sure like how much sales they will do during this time. And it was just flourishing. So it was like one of their records and how much they sold on this day.
It was 74 billion. Alibaba, the founder of Alibaba, started it for all single people as a counter to Valentine's Day. Yeah, and it was nuts.
Really cool idea. So, but if you look at what people were buying, they were buying lots of like live stream and like digital sort of devices related to online streaming and like, you know, online video. So obviously this is something that's going to be flourishing further on. And my third prediction would be that lots of people who had some business ideas and they wanted to start their journey as an entrepreneur, they probably were thinking, oh, you know, maybe I would prefer to keep my like stable full-time job now. I'm not ready yet to run my own business. But now COVID happened, and then suddenly, you know, even having working for a very established IT company no longer is a safe place. You know, they're laying off so many people these days. So I think more people are thinking, okay, if not now, when? I need to pursue my my idea, my dream. So I should do this. So I would say like sole entrepreneurship and sole traders, they will also be on
there has been a spike. I've seen it somewhere. There's a spike in company registrations. I don't know if it was here or internationally, but people actually registering businesses have shot up because of exactly that. The old I'm stable in my job situation is just went out the window.
Absolutely.
Just I'm gonna jump very through the last two trends, and then I want to get into to the last thing. But the one trend was for 2021, increased action on social issues. So from a business point of view, still having taking a stand on thing on social issues, whether it is the Black Like Me kind of movements or whether it's anything of that, the brands are actually kind of taking a stand on social issues, be it environmental or other. And then the last one is these brand-to-brand collaborations. So things like Adidas and Lego did a brand-to-brand kind of a collaboration kind of effort where I think I don't know if the little Lego little people were wearing Adidas or whatever, but they're doing something like that. Travis Scott and McDonald's did a kind of a combination, but there's a lot more brand to brand kind of collaboration that they see as another trend going forward. And Katarina, I know you said you wanted to do influencer marketing and then kind of moved away from it, but 3 years after you wanted to do that, influencer marketing is massive right now, isn't it? If and I don't want to always say how old I was, but back when I was young and I studied marketing, there were four P's of marketing, right? The four P's of marketing: product, price, position, and place. Yes, and a packaging. And now there's, if you look at the marketing courses, and I think there's something like 79 P's. Now, I don't know how many, but there's a hell of a lot of them. Lots of things to consider. And I mean, influencer marketing and social media marketing just wasn't there when I studied. And that's why you always have to keep learning. But yeah, how big is influencer marketing now, Ekaterina? Are you going to take another fly at making that your focus?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are doing influencer marketing for every client we have, whether it's B2B and B2C. So some people now understood how like a beauty blogger collaboration works, but they are not quite aware that in B2B sector, there's a bigger thing now about the personal brands. You know, like you guys are very active on social media yourself. So you are already influencing someone's decisions in terms of their international expansion, you know. So I would say that the consumer is becoming more and more educated year by year. So if before you would see something on TV and someone said, this is a great product, you're like, okay, I'm going to consume it now. But it's no longer like this. There's so many companies and you need to evolve. Like you need to find new ways of building that trust with other people. And of course, we're all human beings. So if one of you tells me that, okay, this is a good partner for you, or this is a good product for you, or this is a good service for you, I'll say, okay, because I trust them. You know, we have this relationship with us. So I would say that companies are trying to build this relationship through their brand ambassadors. So if you follow someone like, I don't know, an actress or a fitness blogger or someone else who's influencing your life in a good way, because of that person you now eat healthy, or because of that person you've developed your relationship with your husband or wife, you know, maybe it was like a psychologist, like having a blog on Instagram, etc. So people are trying to utilize those like loyalty and the relationships and build up something on them. So this is how influencer marketing would work. But in terms of brand to brand collaboration, it's what I see nowadays a lot with like companies that have been established for lots of years. You know, they've been like built who knows when, and they're trying to get like newish companies on board with their fresh ideas, with their new audiences, and they're trying to, as long as they're keeping and retaining their existing client base, they're trying to tap into like a younger generation. And this is where like a new brand comes together with an old brand, and together they bring like some freshness into the old brand. So it's just exchange of audiences, simple as that.
Yeah, I think that's the new way of looking at using influencers as well, right? So like you said, the first step was, I have a beauty product, I'll find a beauty blogger, they'll speak about the product because their audience trusts them, they go to them for that specific thing. The other side of it is to use different people to tap into a new market. So I think it was Dunkin' Donuts drove up their sales by 33% by doing a collaboration with Charli D'Amelio. Siraj, for you, that's one of the most famous people on TikTok. She's got 100 million followers on there. But that she obviously bought in a much younger market, which was a problem for them. They weren't getting that sort of 15 to 22 year old. But then all of a sudden, because they gave her a special branded drink and she's got so many followers, even tapping into a small percentage of that, they go, I'm going to go try her drink. So, you know, it doesn't directly relate to her market, but by getting her, you know, almost that is a brand to brand collaboration, they bought in a whole new market and drove sales by 33%.
And another comment, guys, a very important one. You know, I was talking about influencer marketing from the perspective of the brand, but let me explain to you why consumers are using influencers so much in terms of like coming to them for advice. again, if you just go to any local store, like a big one, you know, let's say like a big Tesco again, you look at, let's say, a toothpaste. I mean, how many brands, even Colgate has like 30. How on earth am I supposed to know what I need? Like, and obviously people are getting so lazy these days, you know, I would like my food can come to my door, you know, I can call a medical professional, come to sort me out. I can do anything online these days. So, and people become really lazy with the decision-making process. So it's much easier to just, okay, I trust her. She told that, boom, I don't need to do anything anymore. No more research. I just hope for the best because, you know, if this brand collaborates with her and if she took them on board, they should be worried about their reputation. So if they give me a bad product, you know, they would be blamed for that. So that's why also like consumers just started using influencers so much for the easy to ease their decision-making process. It's another psychological aspect of influencer marketing.
And I think it's quite a nice segue to our kind of global expansion mini case study, because I'm conscious of time. So we won't take too long on this one. But what was your first interaction with Red Bull, any of you? Was it actually, how did you first try Red Bull? And what was your first interaction? I'm interested.
I'm not sure should I share this example.
I'm probably thinking the same thing.
Ben, what's your goal? Yes, this is how it happens.
I need to make sure I don't build up the wrong brand perception here for myself. But yeah, I think probably vodka Red Bull would have been one of the first ones.
Because I'm surely vodka was sold before Red Bull, right? So vodka's been around for a while, but Red Bull clearly, if I remember correctly, because I've always drunk Red Bull when I went out clubbing. I don't drink alcohol, so it was my drink Red Bull, but probably because there was some really sexy guy, not a guy, a woman, that was selling it to me, right? But yeah. But they that was one of their ways of doing it. And I'm trying to get around how they got into the market. So in the clubbing scene, they definitely had funny minis. I don't know if you had the minis with a big Red Bull can at the back. They had women, really good looking men and women at the clubs walking around giving tasters. That's one thing. And then the other thing was the Red Bull kind of Fluchtag. Do you remember that? These events where guys were making the craziest aeroplanes and trying to crash it into, like trying to fly it as far as they could. But Red Bull used buzz around non kind of drink issues, which was just fun. They took a brand element of their brand, which, because there's the energy side of it, there's the taste side of it, but then there's also just the extreme side of it, and they tapped into the extreme side of it and ran some crazy events when it came to the stuff that actually got them publicity in different markets. Do you guys remember the Fluchtag?
I think I've seen it. I don't think I knew the name for it. But yeah, the events where they all hurl themselves off a platform trying to fly a plane made of cardboard.
But I remember the first time I saw an advertisement. I think that was pre-vodka Red Bull times. So I saw an advertisement on TV. There was like a drawing where they were showing like a very tired person, and then just after drinking Red Bull, it just, you know, got the wings and everything could be possible. I think that I have this strong association with Red Bull and motorsport, or just like any kind of like extreme sports. So I think that was just everything like related to energy, and the same thing with clubbing. You know, I would say that why the drink was crazy, because with drinking in the club, there is like a fine line, you know, before you fall really sleepy into like actually having fun. And I think this is what they try to build together, like, so to give you this extra push with Red Bull, you know, so you can keep on going. I think this is what like the association I've had with them, but I don't remember like any like brand placements, you know, in clubs, etc. I think
what I wanted to chat about was all of these extreme kind of things. So they started in the 80s, and their first event they ever did was an extreme, almost like a an Ironman, but it was an extreme kind of event. Mm-hmm. Then they did these, they did in 1991, they started off with the Flugtag. I think it probably Austrian, it would be Flugtag, where they're trying to, but it was all just around fun and extreme. Then they did like the world biggest windsurfing danger, kind of windsurfing world record, trying to like, you know, do the surf the biggest waves. What I liked about this, and it's relevant to us and our global expansion, is they also then tailor-made things for, so my wife is Czech, and so within Prague, they did the, I think they called it the Red Bull Crushed Ice, where guys are speed skating through the city, through the town square in Prague. But it was just like we're talking about total extreme here. And in South Africa, they did skateboarding. So they again, this the extreme guys coming down one of the very steep hills in Cape Town, where they ran these events where guys are coming down at 100 miles per hour or whatever the speeds they get to. So they tailor made even the events into the different markets, which I thought was really interesting. And only in kind of 2004 did they start now sponsoring like the normal mass market sports like Formula One and others. They bought a soccer team and they did other things, but before that it was just extreme stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think this is actually representative of where a lot of companies might be going. So Red Bull clearly ahead of the game, but I might be going a little bit tangent here. But when you look at retail, for example, it suffered so much during COVID. A lot of businesses have struggled, some of them being bust, big ones in the UK, recently Arcadia Group. So then it feels like if everyone's going to be online shopping, what are you actually going to be doing in the real world? It becomes about those experiences. So Red Bull have associated themselves with all these amazing experiences and, you know, building up that kind of fun element, and people think, oh, I want to go there. We'll have a Red Bull while we're there or whatever. When it comes to any kind of shopping or any kind of product marketing, I think if you're physically going in store, it's more about the experience. So how can you make somebody, you know, have a really good time? Is it a live tasting? Is it kind of get people involved on the cooking of a, if it's a food product? With clothes, I don't know, I haven't really thought about it, but there's got to be an experience. It's not just, you know, shopping, having
a ice skate down the aisles, and you can only what you can grab is what you have to buy at the end.
Exactly. 30 seconds, grab what you can.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah, where Red Bull is moving now is because they had all of that extreme stuff in Cape Town. They brought the F1 car and raced it through the city, and everyone could come and watch an F1 car racing through the city. They capitalize on their sponsorships quite well as well. But the kind of spaces they're going into now is music. So they sponsoring music events and gaming. So for one of the first time, they now Red Bull are sponsoring gaming, which for me, again, it makes sense because the guys are playing until early hours of the morning through the night, kind of playing, they're drinking Red Bull. But they now sponsored these like really non-sporty guys doing extreme kind of gaming things.
Hang on, it's called esports. It's still sporty, so much.
Yeah, I can add a little thing here. What could be the reason for why they're going into esports? Because of the COVID, again, lots of events were cancelled, and because we are doing like live TV for sports a lot, so we've got more clients in esports these days because that's the easy way to do at least some sports. Because the TV channels are empty, there is nothing going on, and the national TV channel started accepting esports games. So there are lots of people watching them on a daily basis, like those who are really into gaming or those who are just bored and there is no other sport happening these days. So I would say that could be like both. Could be that just, you know, there is no sports going on. So that's why they also tapping into the esports sponsorship.
Yeah. Good. Guys, I'm actually going to leave it there just based on time. Katharina, thank you very much for joining us. You added a nice dynamic to the whole mix of us. You know, I'm always stuck with Zane and Ben. I can't get rid of them. It's always good fun. Okay. Thank you for being here. Zane and Ben, thanks for
being here. No worries. Thanks, Katharina.
If you're around, follow us, watch us, give us feedback. Let's have some more coffee. It doesn't have to be an espresso. But thanks very much. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, everyone.
Cheers. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.